Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. According to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, there are currently more than 85,000 dams in the United States. Surprisingly, the majority of these dams are privately owned. The Association of State Dam Safety Officials estimates that fraction to be about 65%.
Private dams are under state regulation, but many state dam offices lack adequate operating funds, and as well, states differ widely regarding their safety standards. The publicized failures of two private dams this year, the 300-year-old Freetown, Massachusetts dam in March, and the Lake Delhi Dam in Iowa in July, have brought attention to the safety of privately owned dams. Just how safe are they, and who is responsible when they fail?
We have with us today to discuss this important topic David Gutierrez of the California Department of Water Resources. David is acting chief in the Division of Dam Safety and also is the current president of the Association of State Dam Safety Officials. David, thanks very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Let's start with some basic facts about dams. Give us a better sense of why people build dams and what functions they can serve.
Well, first of all, dams are certainly critical to the society, especially here in the United States, where water is a valuable resource for us. And they do serve various functions. Obviously, what we're trying to do with dams is we're trying to store water for a variety of uses. This could include things such as agriculture, irrigation, municipal use. We have dams that store treated effluent or sewage water, industrial water for mining, etc. Dams also, through their hydro power generation facilities, of course, can produce electricity. We have dams that are used for flood control. We divert water out of dams. They're also used for debris control. And, of course, the reservoir itself is often used for recreational purposes. So that gives you a kind of a quick summary of some of the uses of how we use the reservoirs and the dams.
Do private dams have different functions than publicly owned dams?
Not necessarily in general, but when you look at some of the larger facilities throughout the country, most of the larger facilities are certainly publicly owned, and that's because the financial resources that are necessary to construct those structures, and those are usually multi-purpose projects. So those kind of dams, multi-purpose, they're used for many of the functions that I previously mentioned. And then when you get into the privately owned dams, if you look at the most of them, those are mostly like small farm dams throughout the country. But there are some privately owned large facilities, and those would be owned more by corporations, et cetera, such as like PG&E or Southern Cal Edison to produce electricity are examples.
So if I'm driving down a highway and I see a dam, there isn't a particular clue that I could get as to who owns it.
Not necessarily. On some dams, if you're driving down the highway, some of the dams probably put a sign out in front, and it's usually those public agencies that have those signs out in front, maybe owned by the Army Corps of Engineers or a particular state, and they'd have a sign out there. But when you look at the percentage of dams, they're smaller dams. They're probably farm dams, and you wouldn't have an idea who owns those particular structures.
Who are the owners of private dams? Is it mostly farmers, individuals? Is it also businesses, community associations? Who owns private dams?
Well, there's, again, a variety of owners. But if you were to look at the, when you quoted early on the 85,000 dams, out of those 85,000, most of those are privately owned. And most of those privately owned dams are pretty small dams. And those are like farmer-type folks, and they're used for that kind of a function. But then again, there are a few privately owned companies that also own the dams.
So are the smaller dams, how are they constructed? Are they mostly earth-fill dams?
When you get into the smaller dams, I would say almost all of them, not all of them, but almost all of them are earth structures.
And with the larger privately owned dams, are they built privately or were they publicly built and then transferred to private ownership?
Well, in almost all cases, they were built privately. And rarely do you have a public agency who builds a dam for a purpose and then no longer has that use and then switches it over to a private. Now, with that being said, there have been some dams throughout the country, quite a few actually, that the Old Soil Conservation Service, who is currently known as NRCS, they helped financially build some dams throughout the country, and these were for farmers, et cetera. And then they either gave them technical support or also financial assistance, built the dams, and then those dams were turned over to the private entities.
Well, how would you describe the distribution of private dams across the United States? Are there certain areas where they're more common? And if they're more common in an area, is there a particular reason for that?
Well, I think, as you had mentioned earlier, well over half of the dams throughout the country are privately owned, and I think the number that ASDSO generally quotes is about 65%. Now, you can't really look across the country and see necessarily pockets where there's more privately owned dams than others. I would say if you get more towards the West Coast, that number slightly goes down where private owners are smaller, but it's not necessarily too much smaller than that figure. So areas like Arizona, California, Washington, you might have a slightly different figure where maybe half or so of the dams are privately owned. But in general, if you look across the landscape, you don't necessarily, it does vary state to state, but you don't necessarily see a general way that these particulars go.
We started out this conversation talking about some significant dam failures that have happened recently. Are private dams more susceptible to that kind of risk than the publicly operated dams?
I would say in general that's probably true. When you look at just the number of failures of dams, I would say that generally the smaller privately owned dams are failing probably a little bit more often in terms of frequency as the larger dams.
Why do you suppose that might be?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One would be that the privately owned dams didn't necessarily have the resources to construct it to the standards or requirements that some of the public agencies would give bigger scrutiny towards. But in addition to that, some of the privately owned dams, they're actually the smaller dams. And many of the dams that we're talking about and the ones that fail, there's very little consequence of failure. So as a result of that, we don't give as much attention to those structures. So we know that if they fail, there's going to be less of a consequence. And therefore, we would focus our resources, obviously, on the bigger structures where there is a substantial consequence of failure, and we being the states throughout the country and the regulatory agencies would make sure that those larger dams are not failing and therefore don't spend as many resources to make sure that those smaller dams are adequately maintained.
So typically, and it is in a typical state, what authority does the public agency have in terms of inspecting or ensuring the safety of a privately owned dam?
Well, when you get to just the particulars of authority around the country, it's fairly similar. And the authorities do allow the ability for the regulator, and these are the state agencies throughout the country, to inspect the dams. They usually also have the authority to require modifications. They have the authority to take actions such as lowering the dam if there's a serious incident, or taking it over if there's a real serious and immediate threat and actually alleviating the threat somehow. So when you just talk about the authority specifically, it's fairly consistent around the country, and the authorities are pretty well lined out. So there is good authority. Now, when you switch over to from authority to actual ability, then I think the line changes from state to state quite a bit.
And you had mentioned that the Association of State Dam Safety Officials, that you're the president of, focuses more on the larger dams, the dams where a failure would be consequential for people in the area. What are the important things, part of your work is to educate people, the owners of these dams, what are the most important things that you stress to these private owners of larger dams where a failure would have real consequences?
Well, I think when you talk about the owner, I think the important thing to remember is the owners, of course, first of all and foremost, is they're responsible for the structure. It's not necessarily the regulator. It's the owner that's actually responsible for it. And then with that, I think it's also important to remember that the owner is the first line of defense. So in cases of regulations and regulators, they may inspect the dam once per year, sometimes less frequent than that. But the owner, who's there at the dam most of the time, and in some cases daily, they have to be able to look out for signs of instabilities, et cetera, so that they will be able to kind of sound the horn and let the experts know about situations as they arrive. So one of the important things for the association, as well as the separate regulators throughout the country, one of the important jobs is to educate those owners to make sure they understand what they should be looking out for.
So I want to know more about what they should be looking out for, although I don't currently own a dam. But let me start with maybe an easier question, and that is, so what are the typical mechanisms of failure in these dams?
Well, if you were to look at a summary of failures throughout the country over the years, top of the list would probably be overtopping of the dam itself. And what that means is when we have a large storm come through, the water obviously falls on what we call the drainage area, and this is the area behind the reservoir. That rainwater infiltrates into the basin and then eventually meets the reservoir. And most dams have what we call a spillway constructed at the particular dam. What that spillway's job to do is, as that water comes up through the rain, the spillway's job is to take that water out of the reservoir and bypass the dam itself. Now, in some cases, either that spillway is not being well maintained or it wasn't necessarily constructed originally to the standards or requirements that would be necessary. That's overcome. The reservoir water starts going over the top of the dam, and once that happens, you generally get a quick erosion of the particular dam and then failure of the dam. That would lead to failure of the dam. So overtopping is the number one problem when you look at historical failures, and then right behind that is seepage problems. And so every dam seeps. It's perfectly typical for a dam to seep. However, sometimes the quantity of seepage, and this would be the water from the reservoir actually migrating through the structure of the dam itself, sometimes that amount of flow is too great and the seepage quantities are too great, which could eventually start eroding the material and cause what we call piping. And that's one of the next major incidents of dam failures when you look at the historical data. So overtopping number one, seepage is generally right behind it at number two.
So to what extent is overtopping attributable to, let's say, inadequate design, that is not building the dam high enough, as opposed to the spillway either not having the capacity or not being maintained so that it has the capacity?
I don't know the exact figures of those in terms of, I don't think I've ever seen data to support that it's 50% one way or another. But in general, when these spillways are overcome, what it is they were designed for very low or potentially no standard at all requirement. Maybe they were designed back in the part where there wasn't any regulatory authority over those things. And so they weren't necessarily even engineered or designed. So that is a big part of it. You can have vegetation or other problems associated with clogging up that spillway, and that happens as well. So I don't really know, and I haven't seen data that supports the figures, but I think both have occurred, and we definitely have case histories of both situations.
You mentioned that in many cases state regulators may only be out to a dam once a year or even less, and the owner may be out there every day, and part of your work is to educate the owner to know what to look for when they're out there, because they're the one that's going to sound the alarm. What are the main things that you're educating owners about? What are the things that's most important for you that they be looking for when they're out on their dam?
Well, we're looking for them to try to keep an eye on the things that they can actually see. So what I mean by that is vegetation control is obviously a big issue. We don't want vegetation to either overcome the embankment itself, or we don't want vegetation, obviously, in the spillway that would clog the spillway. So we want them to understand vegetation and how it's important to control that. We'd want them to understand rodent control or animal control, and to make sure that animals, in fact, can damage a dam and do, and historically have caused problems. So we want to make sure that they understand and know that they have to maintain their dam in order to do that. And then a dam is no different than any other structure or anything else you have, like a car or whatever. We try to educate them that they have to continue to maintain the structure itself and the facilities that go along with the structure, and it's important to do. So we kind of strive to make sure that owners understand these pieces of the puzzle, that it's important, and that they're a critical part to keeping the dam safe.
Is there any certification or training that someone's required to undertake if they want to build a dam and become a private owner of a dam?
No, there isn't, actually. So generally, the expertise relies on the engineers to actually make sure the dams are designed correctly. So if you were to go state to state, I think pretty much every single state requires that not just anyone could design or build a dam. An owner would actually have to hire an engineer to construct the structure, and then the regulator would review that design to make sure that it's adequately designed and then constructed. So the owners hires an expert to do that. Now, once the dam is built, then the problem becomes is potentially, especially for the smaller dams, there's not necessarily resources that the owner has to continue hiring an engineer to watch his structure. So what we've been trying to do in organizations like the Association of State Dam Safety Officials is continue to educate the owners. So we've tried to develop owner workshops and things like that to make sure that they're educated and understand what it takes to own and operate a dam.
Are they required to have insurance in the case their dam should fail?
Insurance is generally, as far as I can tell, when you look across the country, I don't know of any state that actually requires to for a dam owner to have insurance. Now, that's not to say some owners, obviously, they do carry insurance for dam failures. I have some figures to show myself that the states don't require it, and so far I don't know of a state that actually does require insurance. But what I don't have is I don't have figures to tell us how many owners, what's the percentage of owners that actually have insurance.
My understanding is that some of these dams, these privately owned dams, are providing a recreational facility for a development. I think, but I'm not sure, that might have been the case in one of the recent failures, the Delhi Dam. Do you think that the residents who live near these facilities and who are attracted to them have a sense of what the risks of failure might be?
Not necessarily, and that's actually a kind of a difficult issue sometimes. I think if you were to just to answer your question, do owners of property either downstream or around a dam know that the risks that they're taking on, either living by or owning a particular structure? I think the answer is not necessarily. That's not a very high number. Now, however, how do you kind of fix that? It's not quite as easy as maybe it sounds to just notify everybody. And that is, it's all really kind of comes down to resources, and then where do you spend your resources? So in some situations, when you talk about risk and you talk about dams, and you can maybe compare that risk to other structures throughout the country or just risk in general for life, in some cases, especially the bigger dams, the risk or the probability of failure is extremely, extremely low. So you might have, these dams are designed for kind of one in a million kind of requirements. And so trying to get that point across that they should be understanding the risk associated with that, but then you give them figures like that, it kind of gets a difficult, it's difficult to educate them about that. And so, again, it comes down to resources and how do you spend the resources, and just notifying and educating the public. It's not quite an easy thing to do. We're trying to do that more. We're trying to do it more from a national basis. So the Association of State Dam Safety Officials is certainly taking the lead to try to educate the public on a national basis. FEMA, of course, is really trying to push risk and the understanding of risk to folks that either live downstream of dams or even levees. And so it's something that's on a lot of folks' minds. Not real easy to do because it costs money to notify people, but we're trying to do that better.
So does your association have a public an outreach program that targets the general public in addition to the owners?
Yes, we do. We have various tools available, including brochures and websites, et cetera, to try to educate the public. And then we try to take advantage of situations where we, of course, invite media, and then when media is interested, we obviously take advantage of that on specific basis to educate the public.
Have you seen cases where a dam, particularly a privately owned dam, is in such poor condition that you think it ought to be removed?
Yeah, actually, there is some case histories, and we're working on several of them ourselves, where the dam has outlived its function for a variety of reasons, and they should be removed, and it would be a benefit to everybody. Now, as simple as that sounds, it's not necessarily easy because it takes resources and sometimes the dam owner's resources to repair a dam. And then oftentimes it'll actually even take even more resources to actually remove the dam. And then there's also environmental constraints when you actually remove a dam. So it's sometimes very difficult to do to remove a dam. And the reason why is those resources are not necessarily available, because once you remove the dam, there's not necessarily a dollar benefit that's going along with the removal. So it's hard to get someone to pay for that. There are definitely case histories of those situations.
So the benefit really is in the reduction of a risk, and presumably the probabilities already looks very small to start with.
In some cases, the probability is a little bit higher than it should be. But the folks that are living downstream who have the risk, maybe they would be looking at it that it's not their responsibility to pay for that reduction. It's the dam owners, because the dam owner put that there, and they're those ones that had the benefit. Yet the dam owner doesn't necessarily have the resources to remove the dam. So it sometimes gets to be somewhat difficult. Now, with that said, there are some really great case histories where we have been able to remove some dams that are just not useful.
In the infrastructure show, our podcast, we talked to a number of people about the broad problem of deterioration of infrastructure in the United States and what to do about it. Is the problem of deterioration of dams, and particularly privately owned dams, is that fairly stable, or is it getting worse because of resource constraints?
Well, obviously it is getting worse, and I think dams are a perfect example of the problem with infrastructure. So when you look at dams and when they were built, over half the dams in those 85,000 dams that you quoted early on in the discussion, over half of them are over 50 years old. And again, a dam's no different than anything else. They age, they require maintenance, and they require rehabilitation. And in many cases, over the decades, they're still providing service, yet they're getting worse and worse and worse because they're aging. And we haven't always kept up maintaining those structures. So it is getting worse in some cases. The other problem is if you go state to state, there's a huge and wide variety of programs out there in terms of state regulations. So if you were to come to, say, California, we have probably the strongest dam safety program in the country, where we're forcing the issue, and we've been forcing the issue for 80 years, where we're requiring and having owners actually maintain the dams. And so in general, they're in fairly decent shape. And then you go to other states where their regulatory program is extremely small, it's not well-funded, and so they don't necessarily even know all the problems that they have. And as they get more and more funded, it's not that the problems are getting worse, it's just that they're actually identifying them better than they had in the past. And so we're recognizing the problems more and more. So obviously, dams are pretty high and top of the list of the need for infrastructure improvement, just because of the fact that they're getting old, they're aging, yet they still provide a critical service to the citizens of the country.
Are there federal programs that make money available for maintenance and improvement of dams?
We've tried to actually get, through the Association of State Dam Safety Officials and the American Society of Civil Engineers, we've tried to put in through congressional action, tried to get some support to repair at least publicly owned dams throughout the country. And thus far, it's called the National Dam Rehabilitation Act. Thus far, we haven't been able to get that pushed through Congress and get that particular bill authorized. So as of right now, there isn't, and we're going to continue to try to push that for federal support.
A lot of people have heard of the Johnstown flood in Pennsylvania in 1889. There was a failure of a privately owned dam and resulted in the death of 2,200 people. Have there been other private dam failures in the U.S. Since that have approached that kind of loss of life?
Yeah, if you look back at the history of dam failures throughout the country, they're all over the place. And even here in California, and what started our program back in 1928, we had the St. Francis Dam failure, where this was a 200-foot-high concrete dam that failed and killed 400 to 500 people in Southern California. That started the dam safety program here in California. And then scattered throughout the country, throughout the decades, there's been some significant dam failures. And then in the 70s, there was a series of dam failures, dams such as Laco Hills and Canyon Lake and Teton, which is a major federal project. Kelly Barnes, which I think actually got the attention of President Carter and his wife, which actually started the National Dam Safety Program. And then you look at throughout the years, and there's still about a dozen small dam failures. And these are small dams that are out there kind of out in the sticks, where a failure doesn't necessarily cause any damage or doesn't cause any deaths. But there's significant numbers happening. And then when you look at the bigger dams, there's still some failures where we're causing loss of life. There's the failure of Kaloko Dam in Hawaii just a couple of years ago in 2006, where 7 people lost their life. Tom Sock failed just a couple of years ago, and Silver Lake in Michigan, that failed just a few years ago with $100 million damage. So the list is actually pretty big of dam failures across the country, and it's still a significant issue. When you look at the numbers of 80,000, the number, I wouldn't say the percentage of dam failures is high when you compare it to that figure of 80,000. It's just the fact that the consequence of failures obviously could be so large, so you really, really need a really, really small number, preferably zero when you talk about failures of dams.
It's interesting for us to hear you talk about this because, on the one hand, we can say it's an invisible problem. It's not something we hear much about. We do hear about it when there is a failure, and the list that you've just given us of relatively recent failures is certainly longer than I expected it to be, and it reminds us all of the need to watch our infrastructure, to monitor it, to invest in it, protect it, and to ensure its safety as we go forward. So really appreciate the insights that you've offered to us today, and thanks for talking with us.
You're very welcome, and I definitely enjoyed the talk.
Good, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.